Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
If you've listened to the show, then you know that we are fans of cryptocurrency. And apparently, there are some people that decided, well, you know what? Everything else on the internet has cats. Let's put cats on the blockchain.
Why not?
So what is this? All I saw a headline of something about, you know, cats loading up a blockchain, and I thought it was a joke, but apparently it's an actual thing.
Oh, it's a real thing. It's a big time real thing.
And who was it? CNBC apparently has even reported on this.
They're doing some coverage of it, but I got to say, I mean, I'm pretty heavy on Twitter, and the Bitcoin community there, or I should say the blockchain community, has been having a lot of fun with this whole thing. But we'll talk a little bit about this, and then we'll talk about some points. So, again, this comes to us from CNBC. Meet CryptoKitties, the $100,000 digital beanie babies epitomizing the cryptocurrency mania.
All right. Tell me more.
All right. Think breedable beanie babies. That's a better way of putting it.
Hold on. So is this like those stupid Tamagotchi things, but with a blockchain for some reason? Because you know, there's always the person that thinks everything would be better with a blockchain.
Because Ethereum actually has this programming language, people are realizing that there's more that can be done on the Ethereum blockchain. And one of the things is, let's see if we could program a picture of a cat.
Okay.
So that cat, I'm going to program this little image of a cute little kitty. And because the blockchain can never go away and that anything written to it is there, then that cat exists. And that cat exists once. And somebody has ownership of that cat.
And I'm on the website right now for CryptoKitties. It's CryptoKitties.co, and there are pictures of little cartoon cats. It says collectible, breedable, adorable, start meow. I'm looking on the FAQ for CryptoKitties, and yeah, this just seems... I'm not going to wind up saying that the people that created it are idiots, because, you know, clearly you've got to be very intelligent to come up with an idea of people are going to buy digital pets.
Right.
And they've made a lot of money off of it.
They have, and they are. It's kind of hard to look at this and not see it burning out. Like, you know...
The pet rock?
Yeah, well, I mean... That's
oh, cool. Now there's the USB-connected pet rock.
Well, that I'd buy. But we've seen
connecting
lots of...
it to the USB doesn't do anything. It's still just a pet rock.
That's okay.
But it's got a USB cable for some reason.
That's forward looking. But the thing is a lot of times these things, you know, become sort of flashes in a pan. And sometimes they're that kind of silly thing that just causes people to look at the technology. And that's why I don't really bash the whole idea of CryptoKitties. I'm going back to the story here. Created by Vancouver-based Axiom Zen, CryptoKitties launched to 200 users on Thanksgiving and was open to the public last Tuesday. More than 41,000 unique kittens have been sold already, according to Delavoye's data, but CryptoKitties' popularity indicates blockchain technology still has a long way to go to reach its hype.
Did you guys hear about Al Franken's resignation from the Senate? He's planning on resigning in the next few weeks based on some allegations he had.
I saw that, and then somebody posted that he had resigned, so I'm Googling right now.
I saw something that there was going to either be a special election or the governor might wind up appointing someone, which
the
led me to believe that he had resigned.
No, he's going to be resigning in the coming weeks, he said.
Okay.
I actually have a theory as to why he's resigning. Everybody thinks it's for the idea of having a moral high ground. My theory is that he's just trying to save the Democratic seat. Because if he were the Democratic nominee next year in the 2018 Senate elections, these allegations would undoubtedly have a huge impact on how electable he is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I suspect you're right.
And, you know, I guess, and a lot of people bring up the comparison, well, Al Franken is resigning, so why isn't Donald Trump resigning? And I don't think they understand how politics works.
And Al Franken would not be up for election next year. He would be up in 2020 because he got reelected in 2014. But, yeah, the point still stands of, you know, if he winds up resigning, then there's going to be, you know, like less focus on him and then something. When I first saw something about the blockchain as being loaded up with cats, I was like, what? What? And now that I'm hearing about it, I'm still, what?
So here's how I relate it to people.
Yes.
Bitcoin is a store of value.
Ethereum is a store of kitties.
Yeah. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the last we were talking about this, this has caused a tremendous amount of new load to be placed on the Ethereum blockchain, which has impacts on other things that are riding on top of it, like Project Sophia TX, which postponed its token sale by 48 hours this week to Thursday due to network congestion by CryptoKitties. CryptoKitties has also had to raise its birthing fee at least twice due to network congestion. A birthing fee would be the fee you would pay if you want to breed two of your kitties to produce a third.
And so while we're talking about that, I've got the FAQs pulled up. And under breeding, it says, can't you just create new CryptoKitties? Not exactly. Blockchain technology prevents us from tampering with the ecosystem we have built, which protects our CryptoKitty from artificial inflation or the digital collectible equivalent of insider trading. What are your thoughts on cryptos for very specific reasons? So, for instance, there's the IOTA that's supposed to be the crypto for Internet of Things. Mm-hmm. There's been a caller called in about Potcoin that's supposed to be used for cannabis transactions. Now, right. Why anybody would use that to basically advertise, yes, I'm doing something that's federally illegal.
Well, hopefully,
I don't know
hopefully
why.
There's some anonymity built into some of those.
Right, but, you know, and then I know that there are some tokens on the Ethereum platform that have very specific use cases.
Right.
But they're not standalone things.
Yeah, I because this is technology, and the bulk of this technology is open source, which means that anybody can take it, anybody can modify it, anybody can come up with their own, and I think that's a beautiful thing. I could care less how many there are. As a retailer, I hope that as time goes on, that the medium of exchange between people and businesses will settle on one of these. Because, folks, I can tell you this, in another 10 years, it's not going to be MasterCard, Visa, or cash. You are going to be using digital currencies. It may be digital currencies that are put out by a government. I certainly hope not, because that's a horrible idea.
We're 1 week shy of it being 6 years where I posted on Facebook, I have 5.94 something, something, something Bitcoin looking to sell for $16.
Yeah. He did post that. That was an amazing moment during the conference.
Let's do the math real quick, Chris. Let's just round up to six times about 17,000.
I'll say 6 times 20, 120,000.
And that's if I would have just kept those.
Right.
And that's not counting the other Bitcoin that I wound up selling around the same time, where I had about 16 Bitcoin come and go very quickly.
Yeah.
That I sold all combined for less than $100 because it was right after Mt. Gox got hacked. And I said, I don't know about this Bitcoin thing anymore.
Yeah, one of the few wallets that are not, I directly control my keys, that I do like is blockchain.info. So blockchain.info.
Well, they didn't have a wallet at this time in 2011.
That's okay. But what they do is they keep your keys, but they keep them encrypted in such a way that not even they can see them. For those of you who aren't familiar with Mt. Gox, Mt. Gox was like the one place early on that you could actually go and buy Bitcoin.
Right. Do you know what Mt. Gox stands for?
Yeah.
Magic the Gathering Online Exchange. It was a place where nerds could go exchange Magic the Gathering cards, and one of the nerds said, how about Bitcoin?
Well, Mark Karpeles owned the domain name, and when they were talking about opening a Bitcoin exchange, he's like, well, I already own this one. His wife said, it sounds really cool, so let's just use that one.
Yeah.
But Mt. Gox was a real mess, and a lot of it was, you know, most people would agree, due to Mark Karpeles. He kept everything about the business very close to himself. We're talking about something that started out with, you know, tens of dollars flying back and forth,
right,
and ended up being the largest Bitcoin exchange in the world and, you know, millions of dollars. And he had problems with scaling. And in the
end, he had problems with creditors who decided, you know what, give me U.S. dollars in payment. The thing went belly up. But now, because he had all the Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin has skyrocketed. He's now solvent, but there are problems where I think it's the Japanese government aren't letting him wind up cash out the Bitcoin or something. So you're shopping for groceries, and you pick the line that looks the fastest. To your chagrin, the one next to you turns out to be quicker, leaving you waiting in line behind the old lady clutching 9,000 coupons. Sound familiar? There's a simple reason why. Statistically, you're more likely to pick the slowest line. With a line on either side, the odds of calling it correct are just 1 in 3. What's this have to do with cryptocurrencies? Well, if you bought Bitcoin in 2013, for example, the odds of having hodled, and I hate that word. I absolutely hate that word. Chris, real quick, can you explain what a hodler is?
This goes back several years to Bitcoin Talk forums. And one guy who was frustrated that he wasn't buying.
And drunk
on whiskey.
He makes it clear at like 9 o'clock in the morning he was drinking whiskey.
Yeah, he was a bit under the...
And tried typing the headline several times.
And instead of saying hold, he kept typing hodl, H-O-D-L. So he goes on with this long story about how his girlfriend was out at a lesbian bar and why can't I trade better and... You guys are the true pros, and I know I tried to correct this headline 5 times and on and on and on, but it just became sort of an instant joke in the Bitcoin community.
I was looking at some of the stuff earlier today, and Bitcoin's market cap is larger than Google and Amazon, I believe.
Wow, then it's moved further than I had known. That's the whole thing with this market. It's
the market cap, and this was when I was looking earlier today, and price has gone up since then.
Right.
The market cap for Bitcoin was about $260 billion. Google is worth like $100 billion.
Which, to be fair, and also in that, it also means that the market cap of Bitcoin is larger than Citigroup and JP Morgan Chase.
Right.
To throw some names out there that have not been real friendly towards Bitcoin. So I think it's short-sighted. This was a Barron's article. One analyst expects that it will exceed. His target is the total market cap, if you will, of all currencies of all countries. And based on money in circulation, that would mean Bitcoin would be valued at somewhere around $361,000. A Bitcoin based on a couple days ago.
I bought some Bitcoin, I think about $20 worth of it, back in like 2012, 2013.
All right, so you bought like a Bitcoin.
Actually, I think how much I got was, I think it was less than a Bitcoin. It had gone up to like 200 and I got like...
Okay. That would have been like the tail end of 2013 when it went up that first time.
That's okay. You have some Bitcoin.
Yep.
Yeah, I had some Bitcoin, and then when it went up to like above 1,000 and dropped down to like 800 the first time, I think I went and got a Blu-ray ROM for my drive, which I don't regret getting. And then this time, I still had some left. Forgot about it when I found it was going up this high. I knew where my wallet was. Got it back up and running, and I actually just bought a laptop and some other thing I need because I'm actually a computer professional.
Mm-hmm.
So my old laptop died and I needed one. So I still have like 0.01 in my wallet and a little bit left in purse in case I need something else to buy.
Nice.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
We had a family come in, I guess it was Saturday. The dad bought a paper wallet, and he loaded it up with some. And his son was there, and he's like, well, my son wants to do this, too. He has some money he saved. So the son bought some crypto. I think he got Bitcoin, too.
Excellent.
The same family came back in today with their daughter. The daughter has been saving up her money. And she wanted to buy Dash, so we did a Dash paper wallet for her, and she put some of her
now,
money
what, away
into Dash.
Now, what are the rough estimate of the ages of the kids?
Oh,
are we talking about, you know, like
10 years.
High school, college age?
No. The girl today was maybe 10. Her brother that was in the other day was maybe 13, 14, something like that.
Yeah,
but they were just so psyched. And
that sounds very similar to something that we saw inside the Free State Bitcoin shop, where there was a 12-year-old boy that was showing his mom how to use the Bitcoin vending machine.
Later on today, we had a kid who was about 20 years old. He had brought his mom. I think she might have driven. Why? Because they had driven from Albany, New York. And how many miles?
That's about a three-hour drive.
About a three-hour drive, but the state of New York with their bit license regulations is such a horrible place that it's virtually impossible to easily buy cryptocurrency in the state. But they had driven like 3 hours to come to our shop.
Not to outdo anyone's regrets here, I don't have a lot of regrets when it comes to crypto, but I can tell you that the time that my wife accidentally sent 63 Bitcoin to a dead address that we didn't have the private keys for.
Oh,
that stung.
So that's part of that 20-40% of Bitcoins that researchers feel are just gone. They will never be retrievable. And it's sad.
Just the way it is.
But
it drives up the value of the rest of them.
I want to play taps every time I hear that. When I first started out, we used a system called BitPay. BitPay was really cool from that, you know, greenback dollar point of view, because everything I accepted in cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin at the time, would get automatically converted into U.S. dollars and deposited into my bank account. So that makes it really frictionless. And it was 1%, which is cheaper than going through a credit card.
Right.
So it's appealing to me. As time has gone on, that has sort of lost its luster because I realized that I could manage my own cryptocurrencies. I can buy, you know, I can accept cryptocurrencies for purchase, and then I can go out and I can trade and sell them either for U.S. dollars, or I can just hold on to them, or I can buy a different cryptocurrency.
A couple of months, and then for that short period of time, you've got an increase in value.
Well, basically, our strategy right now is that unless there's a really good reason not to, we hold on to everything until the end of the month and then liquidate should we need to.
Chris, there was a sort of Twitter war of sorts that you were witnessing over the last few days.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call it a war. It started off with, you know, just some things being said, and there are a lot of people out there, and this isn't going to be a bash anybody or anything like that type of story, but it involves Andreas Antonopoulos, and for those of you who have been in Bitcoin or have researched Bitcoin, you've likely seen one of his videos. If you've attended any major events on Bitcoin, there's a good chance that he was a speaker there.
Guy's an eloquent speaker and would be a good speaker for anything.
Yeah, he really is. And for me, he's always been one of those guys that can talk very much about the philosophy of Bitcoin and why it's a good thing. And compared to our existing systems, he's very good for the beginner. And he is also that guy that people will call when they have a technical issue with a wallet or an exchange.
I think he's an engineer, yeah.
He is. He has that level of depth and knowledge, and one of his books is Mastering Bitcoin, which is one of those things that every Bitcoin engineer probably has on his bookshelf.
Yeah, and he also wrote The Internet of Money, Volume 1. I don't know if there is a Volume 2, but he wrote
out
Volume
soon.
1.
But I highly recommend that book for the beginner. It's just a collection of his talks.
Is Bitcoin an investment or a currency? And there are people that, you know, they're adamant that it is one or the other, and, well, it can be both.
It can.
Yeah,
be.
Sure, it's both.
Yep.
But there are some people that were absolutely adamant. The panel that I was on, the people sitting on either side of me were absolutely adamant. It is an investment. It is not a currency. Do not ever spend it.
Right. And while that may be good investment advice, it is...
It has been up to this point.
Never spend your money on food, because money is an investment. You should never spend your money.
Right. I'm going to read a little bit more here. At the end of 2012, when I heard about Bitcoin, I had been working as a freelance consultant for about a year after burning out of my previous work as a partner in a research firm. I had a modest retirement fund, a small amount of credit card debt, and enough income to make ends meet. I was really in limbo, looking for the next opportunity. Bitcoin arrived into my awareness.
Didn't we get lucky that he was available for that?
Yeah. Bitcoin arrived into my awareness and slapped me in the face. You've all heard my story of tumbling down the rabbit hole, absolutely consumed by awe. What is not quite obvious is that my obsession also drove me to abandon my consulting work and put all my attention into Bitcoin. But every now and then I get dragged back into the negative. Yesterday was one of those days. I felt crushed. And then something amazing happened. Over the next several hours, tens, dozens, then hundreds of people responded. I sat reading the responses with tears in my eye. An outpouring of positivity washed over me. People I had never met jumped to my defense, reminding me that they started their journey after watching my videos, after reading my books. Some people attacked the original criticism and its author, which I strongly discourage, but the vast majority focused on the optimism. Not only did people remind me of the importance of my work, they also encouraged each other to support me. In the last year, I've gradually received more and more of my income from Patreon. Patreon allows me to regain the financial security without switching my focus to commercial conferences, banking and investment events, and chasing the next paycheck. Because of Patreon, I managed to stop selling and finally hodl. Finally, because of Patreon, I can dedicate my entire focus to the people who I have always felt like I am working for, the community of cryptocurrency dreamers, visionaries, and creators. And now I finally get to work for you. Yesterday, you fed my soul. You reminded me why it is so important to remain optimistic, focused, and determined to overcome the cynicism. It's been a long, hard road. Sometimes I get lost. But every time one of you do, you step up and help me find my way, find my focus again.
Chris, I know you're a big advocate of Second Amendment rights.
I think that's
fair to
say.
The right to self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also a supporter of decentralization, meaning that the federal government should not be, you know, setting diktats from on high.
Correct.
So I'm guessing you must feel a little conflicted this week with the passage of H.R. 38, the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act.
Yeah, there is that level, and it's also sort of a Second Amendment versus Tenth Amendment conflict, you know, where if things aren't specifically spelled out in the Constitution as powers granted to the federal government, then those powers remain with the states or with the people, respectively. But sometimes you'll take the win when it prohibits states from doing things that are not good.
Right.
And sometimes states would prefer to do something that is unconstitutional. Now, that gets a little gray because there's some parts of the Constitution, like the First Amendment, that says Congress shall pass no law.
Right. Once upon a time, Missouri gun rights activists proudly upheld the state's right to pass and enforce its own laws. If you don't like them, well, you're free to move to another state. That concept of state rights used to be a bedrock philosophy of the Republican Party and its campaign against federal overreach. Now, Republicans aren't so sure that states know what's best for themselves, and maybe a whole lot of federal intrusion might be the best way to go. On Wednesday, the U.S. House of Representatives kneeled to pressure by the NRA and approved a bill that would allow federal law to supersede the ability of individual states to enforce their own gun laws.
Okay, we got to stop right there. And this is the reaction of a lot of the press and a lot of people that are anti-gun rights, that anything that could possibly be positive towards the right of self-defense, gun ownership, possession of ammunition or buying of ammunition or any accessory or anything remotely tied to it, it is absolutely the work of the NRA. It's like a gun activist like myself just wake up in the morning waiting for our marching orders to appear in my email from NRA about what I'm supposed to do today.
Nice to talk to you, Daryl. You're one of the nice guys. But anyways, did you know that Albuquerque here now is we're number one in bicycle fatalities?
Bicycles? Again.
That's not something that you want to be number one in.
Oh, so
yeah, we always either the bronze medalist, the third, or the silver, or the gold medalist.
Hold on, they actually give out medals for that? Who gives out the medals?
No, I'm just saying, number one, number two.
Oh, okay, no actual medals, Daryl.
Okay. Okay, so it's not an actual medal.
So you rate very high up there in pedestrian deaths too, right?
Right, that's correct. I don't know what our rating is for pedestrian fatalities last year, but I think this is a 2017 statistic. So, but what is interesting is that, you know, men over age 55 and older are the ones that are the most killed on the bicycle here.
Under H.R. 38, California would have to honor Arizona's concealed carry laws. Well, no. That's not what it says.
Right.
They would only have to recognize a concealed carry permit issued in Arizona or New Hampshire. People that are residents of Vermont that have no option to get a concealed carry permit would not then be allowed to concealed carry in Chicago or New York City and then just say, well, Vermonter. The editorial continues. The law also would even allow qualified out-of-state gun owners to carry concealed firearms in school zones. No, there's actually, from PolitiFact, no, the GOP concealed carry bill does not block states from keeping guns out of schools.
Right.
But then the editorial continues, Senate Republicans acknowledge the bill probably will not pass their chamber, especially since memories of recent gun massacres in Nevada and Texas are still fresh on the minds of their constituents. The NRA is pressing its luck. Americans' voters' tolerance is wearing thin for the mass bloodshed that accompanies looser gun laws.
Oh, geez.
Thinner still is their tolerance for hypocrisy.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.